Where warp meets weft. Where warp meets weft. This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to episode 54, Claudia Chase of Myrix Looms. This episode, our guest is Claudia Chase, the founder and owner of Myrix Looms. We talk about tapestry and bead weaving and her journey as a businesswoman running Myrix. We also discuss politics, what it's like to hear color, and other fascinating topics. After the interview, Claudia and some of her family members feature in a special holiday-themed outtake, so stay tuned for that. Since this is the Thanksgiving episode, I'd like to start off by saying how thankful I am that you're listening. Whether you're new to the show or have been with us since it began back in 2006, thank you for tuning in. I'm also grateful for the help and support of the wonderful Weavecast volunteers. Several people have worked on the show, providing interviews and helping with audio editing. Nancy Smith Kilkenny just turned in a wonderful interview with J.C. Boggs. And Ruth Temple edited the audio on an interview with Sarah Pilgrim that's about marketing your handwoven goods. Both of those will be coming up in a show this winter. I'm honored that they've given me the gift of their time. Last episode, I talked about how I'd spent my summer. Nancy Smith Kilkenny spent her summer working on a new book called Craft a Guild. It's all about how to start a new fiber guild or revitalize an existing one. And if you've ever wanted to be part of the behind-the-scenes working of a guild, or have just wondered what's involved in running a guild, it's a great resource. You can find the book and additional supporting content online at craftaguild.com. I've been getting emails about my bookmark kits, and I am happy to say that the Rigid Heddle bookmark kits are back in stock. The last of the original colorways was snatched up by my students at the Golden Gate Fiber Institute. I put them out on a table, and poof, they were gone within minutes. I don't think it came to blows, but it was kind of close. But just the other day, I received a brand new shipment, 6 gorgeous all-new colorways for the new season. The kits contain hand-painted tencel by Kathy and Diane, the artists at Just Our Yarn. And what you get in a kit is enough yarn to weave up 4 jewel-like color and weave bookmarks. And there are instructions on how to weave up the kits online, or you can get a printout that is a 9-page full-color pattern that has additional content that's not available on the web. The bookmarks weave up fast on a rigid heddle loom, and make wonderful holiday gifts. Through the end of December, I'm running a special, the complete kit with all the yarn you need and the 9-page full-color pattern booklet is 25% off. That's only available through December 31st. And if you want to do it for holiday crafting, you should place your orders now. You can find the bookmark kits online at weavezine.com/shop. In other exciting news, registration for the Madrona Winter Retreat is now open on their website. This is a wonderful event that happens in Tacoma, Washington in February. You can find out more about it online at madronafiberarts.com. I'm teaching 2 brand new classes there this year. E-textiles for knitters and weavers, that is garments that light up and do other interesting electronic things. And a second class called Clothing from the Rigid Heddle Loom, which I'll be co-teaching with Selah Barling. I've already gotten emails from a couple of the students who have registered for the classes, and they are really fun folk. So I'm really looking forward to it. If you're interested and you're in the Pacific Northwest area, that is madronafiberarts.com. Next up, I have a weaving question from a listener. Louise emailed me and asked, "When I weave on rigid heddle looms and shaft looms, the ends of the weaving beat higher than the middle. It seems as if the reed stretches the weaving when beating. I'm at a loss as to the cause, as it happens with all my weaving. Could you please tell me what to do or what I am doing wrong?" Okay, Louise, first of all, thank you for your question. I think this is going to be a really fun feature for the show, and you're helping kick it off. Now, what is happening when you're weaving is that you are not putting enough weft material across in each shot. And this is causing the selvage threads to be drawn in, to pull together closer. So while the body of your cloth might be weaving at 12 ins per inch, what you've slated at, the selvage threads, because they're being crammed together, might be effectively 24 ins per inch or 30 ins per inch. What this does to the fabric is it makes a warp-faced textile only at the edges, and you're not able to pack as many weft shots into an inch in a tightly set or warp-faced fabric as you are in the center of the cloth. So what happens is you get fewer picks per inch at the edges and more picks per inch in the center, and that is what creates that smiling shape. That's a very detailed explanation of something that's very simple to fix. All you need to do to get rid of those smiling edges is provide more weft in each shot. Now, how do you do that? Some weavers, when they throw the weft, they create a bubble. The yarn comes from one selvage, curves up in an arc, and comes down into the next selvage. If that's how you weave, you just need to make that bubble taller, because that will put more weft into the center and spread the warp back out where it's supposed to be. Some weavers like to put the weft across at an angle. If that's how you weave, you just need to make that angle bigger. Again, that will put more weft into the cloth and your selvages will straighten out. If you put in too much weft, you'll get loops at the edge of your cloth, which you don't want. So the way to fix smiling warps is to get exactly the right amount of weft in each shot. How do you determine whether you have exactly the right amount of weft in each shot? You have to experiment, because it depends on the thickness of the yarns, the tension you've put on the loom, how you throw the shuttle, the humidity in the air. There are too many variables. So what I do is whenever I sit down at a loom, I start to weave and I look at my selvages. If they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, then I know I'm good. If they're not doing what they're supposed to do, I look at what they're telling me about the cloth I'm creating and adjust my bubble or my angle accordingly. I've taken a lot of workshops with some wonderful teachers. I've read a tremendous amount about weaving in books and magazines online. But I find, and I tell my students, that the best teacher to help you improve your weaving is the loom. The things the loom tells you are always true. That's my long-winded answer. My short answer is add more weft. I love teaching, and I love the idea of bringing a little bit of what I do in workshops onto the podcast. So I would love to have more of your weaving questions on the show. I'm so excited about this idea that I'm going to raffle off an autographed copy of Peggy Osterkamp's wonderful new book, Weaving for Beginners. To enter, all you need to do is send me a weaving question between now and March 30th. Everyone who sends me a question will be entered in the raffle, whether or not their question is used on the show, and there will be one raffle entry per person. You can ask as many questions as you like, but each person will only be entered in the raffle once. There are instructions about how to submit a question to the show up on the site. If you go to weavecast.com and click the Ask a Question navigation link at the top of the page, there's three different ways you can send me your questions. You can send them an email, or you can send them as audio. Our sponsors this episode are the talented ladies at Just Our Yarn, independent artisans creating hand-dyed luxury yarns and kits for weavers and knitters. Their colors are simply luminous. You can find more information about their yarns and their upcoming show schedule on their website, justouryarn.com. I am here in Edmonds, Washington with Claudia Chase, who is the owner of Mirix Looms, which are some very cool copper tapestry and bead looms. So welcome.
Thank you.
I'm always curious, how did you get involved with weaving?
I was pregnant with my daughter. I had majored in poetry, and I was too distracted being pregnant to write poetry anymore. So I took a tapestry class, and I think I attended three of the classes, and they were also teaching us how to do natural dyeing. But I figured out that natural dyeing also includes some pretty nasty chemicals, and I was not going to do that while I was pregnant. So I took the little Rigid Hell loom that I bought, and I brought it home, and I wove 9 scarves, which had nothing to do with tapestry. Once she was born, I started weaving tapestry on that Rijatel loom. I kind of taught myself.
And did you weave tapestry for a while then?
I wove it for quite a while. I was living in New Hampshire at the time, and I got juried into the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen and started selling these little tapestry purses. Color is my thing. I assume a lot of weavers are like that, and they just love color. So color is the basis of everything I do. And I have this weird thing called synesthesia. When I hear things, I see colors. When I feel things, I see colors. So there are always colors swirling through my brain.
So what color is the sound of a bell?
It depends. I have to hear the sound. And each letter has a color, and numbers have colors, and everything has shapes. You know, like if I think about a year, there's a shape to the months and where they are on this continuum. It's interesting when you're born with that and you don't realize that everybody doesn't have this. My siblings all have it too. And at some point, someone pointed this out to me and I read about it in Scientific American magazine. I'm like, oh my God, that's me. I hear pink. I see red. But the way you discover if you really have it is you go through the letters of the alphabet, and each one has a color, and the color is always the same.
So A is always orange, say?
Yes, red.
Okay.
Things aren't always solid colors. They move, like feelings move from one color to the next. So I have color series that go with emotions. And pretty much they're always the same. You know, joy will have the same color, same pattern. It completely affects my weaving because I see color constantly. I experience color constantly. I'm never not experiencing color. I don't focus on color theory because it's like I live color theory. It's kind of like someone who just hears grammar perfectly. They don't have to understand the rules. It's like living in a paint box. I will lie in bed and I will just let colors run through my head to calm down, and then I'll weave them.
So you could actually weave something using your synesthesia to have words built in using the colors that you've associated with letters.
I could do that. You know, that's true. Oh, my God.
So you could write secret messages to yourself.
Oh, my God, that's wonderful. Well, I was talking to my sister who has it, and she said the way she memorizes phone numbers is red, green, yellow, orange, pink. You just take the color association. But, you know, you're right. That's interesting. That's a good idea.
So you and your siblings, do you agree on the colors?
No one who has this agrees on the color. No. That's the neat thing about it. Except for O. Most people have this think O is white. And zero is gray, grayish white. I think that's pretty common.
That's fascinating. I mean, you could weave something that expressed joy or shapes.
But I do. I weave emotions. So whatever colors add up to whatever emotion will be in a weave. That's how it works, more than weaving words or concepts. And so I remember one day I was really, really, really upset. It was years ago. I crashed my computer. It did one of those race the hard drive kind of thing. You know, years ago we used to do that kind of thing. And I remember being really upset and going into the room where I had my upright tapestry loom. There was a weaving on it that totally expressed calm. And I remember standing there for an hour and looking at these colors so I would calm down. And it worked.
Going from being a tapestry weaver to manufacturing tapestry looms is quite the jump. How did that happen?
By this time, I had gotten rid of the rigid head of looms, and I had purchased large wooden floor looms, a Tizard and a Gilmacra. But I had nothing that I could bring to soccer games and gymnastic events, and I needed something. I didn't know how to knit at the time. I didn't know how to crochet, so I needed a toy to bring places. So I would try little wooden frame looms. And I would weave and weave and weave, and then I would cut them off and throw them away because the loom was not good enough and the selvages weren't correct. So I wanted a portable tapestry loom with great tension and a great shedding device. And I got together with a friend of mine, and we designed the Mirex loom. He worked for a company that made fire engines. So he went into his garage, and he took out fire engine parts. The aluminum beams that are the top and bottom beams were originally fire engine trim. We had these pieces extruded specifically for our needs. The copper was from plumbing jobs he had been doing. We bought and eventually made all the other stuff, but basically it started with fire engine parts. The first prototype was not so different from this. We perfected a bunch of the pieces, but many of the pieces are manufactured by other companies near us in Wisconsin. We're located in Wisconsin. But the actual loom itself looks very much like what we have today. The top and bottom beam is made of square tube aluminum. The sides are two thread rods that come up from the bottom beam. The top beam has two copper tubes coming down from it. So you have those two pieces of loom, and they go together. The copper encases the threaded rod. And then there are wing nuts that allow you to put tension on. And then you have a big, fat copper tube that goes in front that serves as a shedding device.
I have to confess, I actually own a Merrix loom, and I'm a huge fan of it. And it's actually a good enough loom that it's made me happy to do tapestry, because I tend to...
I like those confessions. Gee, that's too bad. I'm so sorry.
but one of the things that, for me, made working on the Merrix loom such a joy is the shedding device. It's something I haven't seen on other tapestry looms. It seems very intuitive and easy to put into place, and it stays in place. How did you come to create such an interesting little shedding device?
Well, I had owned a Hagen loom, which is kind of a similar concept in tapestry looms, but they're made of painted steel. And in fact, I don't think you can get them in this country anymore. They were imported from Norway, I believe, and there's some reason you can't get them. I had had one of those. It was about 22 inches wide, I think, and so it wasn't really portable. It had a shedding device that, sort of similar, sort of not. It was wooden. It had only one bar that you attached the warp to, not two bars. And it didn't attach to the loom very well. It was very shaky. So I took that concept, which I think is a pretty traditional concept of a shedding device for a frame loom, and we perfected it. Now, that's the piece that changed the most over time. Our original clips that held it onto the loom were not as good. In fact, I'm going to get back to that. We had, instead of screw things to hold in the bars, we had little, like, round hole things. We're actually changing the Merrix loom now. The clips that you see there are mm-hmm. becoming wooden, and my brother, whose house I'm staying at, is creating new wooden clips that are going to be quite different.
So why the change from plastic to wood?
The plastic clips, they're made of millable plastic, which costs a fortune. It costs about $800 for a square meter. And the people who make them for me don't always get them perfect. That got me very angry because I want everything to be perfect. So we decided that we could do them out of wood and that we could make them all perfect.
You started weaving. You wanted a portable loom you could take to your kids' sporting events. How then did it grow into a business?
This is a funny story. My husband at the time, my first husband, was a business person. Once we had designed this loom, he said, "Oh, you should go into business selling those looms." And I said, "No, it's the last thing on earth I want to do is go into business selling these looms. I just want to use these looms." But he put pressure on me to do it. We created the prototype in January. In June, we had gone into business. And the way that started, this was fascinating. I called up Earth Guild because I knew they were going to be at Convergence. And I said, "If I send you 20 of these looms, will you have them at your booth? And if they don't sell, just send them back to me. I'll pay all the shipping." And then I hired Kathy Sporing, who's a tapestry weaver, to demonstrate on one of the looms. Actually, I gave her a loom. She would sit there and demonstrate. Convergence happened a couple days later. I get a phone call from somebody. They were at Convergence and they wanted a Merrix loom. I said, "I sent 20. Why didn't you get it there?" She said, "They're all out." And I thought, okay, this is going to work.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about how Merrix looms are manufactured?
That's another wonderful story. I started this company with the guy who originally made it out of the fire truck parts. He manufactured them in Wisconsin. He lived in Wisconsin. I moved back to New Hampshire. At some point, he wanted me to buy him out. At this point, I'd already divorced the husband who had me go into business, was able to do it because I was making money. And this guy wanted me to buy him out, and I didn't have the money to buy him out. So I contacted another friend who lived in Wisconsin, and he bought my first partner out. And he moved the manufacturing to a place called Sunshine House. And Sunshine House is a place that employs mentally disabled people. It's a wonderful place. Normally, they just take work from various places. They bring it in, but Murex became completely housed there. So he set this wonderful thing up for me. And then I decided to buy him out because I like running things by myself. And we agreed that would be a good idea. So I bought him out, but Murex Loom stayed at Sunshine House, where it is to this day. And it's just fabulous.
So they're manufactured in the USA?
Everything. And anything that we don't actually mill ourselves, we have milled by a company that's in the United States.
Before this interview, I did a little bit of research and found out that you actually have an interesting day job.
Yes. Which one's that?
I don't know. How many do you have?
Yeah, I have a day job as a state rep. We've been doing that for, this is my third term. We have two-year terms, and it's my last term.
How did you get into being a state representative?
I don't know. I guess I was really angry about what was going on in politics. I'm kind of a left-leaning politician, and I was in a very right-leaning state. I wanted to see some changes made. My daughter was attending university at UNH, and she had discovered there was a mother-daughter state rep. There were two of them from the same district, and she suggested to me we should do that. So then I decided to run, but I decided I didn't want her to run because she was a freshman, and I wanted her grades to stay A's. So instead, she became my campaign manager. We had no idea what we were doing. Lena decided that the color of our campaign should be magenta. And it turns out you can see those magenta signs from miles away. No blue, no green, no red for us. We were the magenta campaign. It was chase for change. The other side didn't see us coming because no Democrat had ever won in that district since the Civil War, and no female Democrat ever. We won by 4 votes. But initially we lost because they didn't count the votes correctly. And then in a recount, we won. And as a result, I wound up on election law so I could make sure that those votes would always get counted correctly.
What's it like being a small business owner and a state representative?
The problem with being a state rep is you're in session 7 months a year. In New Hampshire, we don't get paid for this job. Well, we do. We get $100 a year. And in fact, when I first ran, I lost and then won in a recount. And when I lost, everybody around me was upset, and I was relieved because I realized what I had been getting myself into. And then I won, and it's like, okay, it's hard to run a business and be a state rep at the same time. And I really want to go back to just running Murex.
Were you able to accomplish what you wanted to as a state representative?
Some of the social issues we were able to get. Some of the financial things, no. It's really hard to accomplish things in politics, I've figured out, but I've accomplished some things.
Well, you've got me curious. What were the social issues?
Same-sex marriage. We did pass medical marijuana, but then the Senate killed it. There were a lot of things that we accomplished in the House that later got killed by the governor or the Senate.
Yeah, I have friends who got married in New Hampshire, so you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That was huge. It was huge. It was huge. They're trying to turn they're not going to succeed.
One of the interesting things about Murex looms is it's not only a tapestry loom, but people also use it a lot for beading.
Yes.
How did you get started using it for beading?
I'm in business. I have this tapestry loom. Now, the tapestry market is not huge. I had this friend, Jane, from Jane's Fiber and Beads. She was selling it as a tapestry loom. She suggested that we use it as a bead loom. That's where I discovered the method of actually weaving beads on the Murex loom. Normally, when you, quote, weave, quote, beads, what you're doing is you have the warp on the loom, and you string up your beads, and you put your strung beads behind and in between the warps and the loom. You press them to the front, and you sew through them. So you're actually not weaving beads. Now, Native Americans have used something called a heddle loom, which I think is similar to a rigid heddle loom, and they've used that for actually weaving beads, putting the beads in between the raised and lowered warps. So thinking about that, I realized that because the Murex looms has a shedding device, we could use the shedding device to actually weave beads. Jane helped me with this. It was hard for me to conceptualize this in the beginning because I wasn't a bead weaver and I didn't like beads. Now I love beads and I love bead weaving. But then they just seem very tiny and annoying and they'd roll around a lot. But what we discovered is when you weave beads on the Murex loom, you put 2 warps in every dent instead of 1. And so when you raise half of the warps, you will have a warp next to every bead. So you're raising half the warps, and you stick your beads behind and in between the raised set of warps. And then when you lower those warps and raise the other warps, you've locked your beads in place. And there'll be a thread next to every bead. That was so hard for me to get that in the beginning. Because if you set it up the way you would for tapestry and wove the beads in, you'd have a thread, a bead, a bead, a thread, a bead, a bead, a thread. So this makes a very stable fabric. The beaded purses that were woven in the 30s were woven on regular weaving looms with a regular weave setup, not with double warps. And so they would have to weave an empty thread between each row of beads to stabilize it. And I didn't want to do that, so we came up with this concept.
How does the drape of this technique compare to the drape of a more traditional bead weaving?
It's similar because in the more traditional bead weaving, you have twice as many wefts because you're sewing back through. This one, you have twice as many warps. The drape is actually similar. The piece is stronger, though, because your warps determine the strength of your piece. So if you have twice the number of warps, your piece is going to be stronger. It basically looks the same when it's off the loom.
You're actually in town teaching a workshop on this technique.
Yes. I'm going to be teaching at Semantics Gallery. They sell my jewelry. They've done that for a few years. And I decided, my son is in school in California, and he had spring break, and my brother and his spouse live in Edmonds. And I needed to get the heck out of New Hampshire. So I decided randomly that I wanted to teach a workshop here. I thought I might teach it at my brother's house. But then I contacted the gallery that sells my jewelry, and he said he'd love to have it there. And I thought, oh my God, how wonderful to teach weaving in a gallery setting. Put it all together, got 6 students to sign up, and we'll be teaching this weekend.
Have you done a lot of teaching?
Before I got into politics, I used to teach tapestry quite a lot. I'm just getting back into it, and I love it, so I'm glad to be getting back into it.
So you have a wonderfully designed loom. Do you have any plans for changing it or things you would tweak on it?
As I said, we're creating the new clips out of wood. We have been tweaking it all along. What we always keep in mind is that the first Mirex loom has to work with anything we create afterwards. Any accessory, anything we do is compatible with our first looms. I do, every couple of years, come up with a new size or a new concept because that's fun. And right now we have 7 sizes, ranging from 5 inches wide to 38 inches wide. We have this little mini mirror that my concept, which you could carry in your pocket. It's not quite that small, but that's the ultimate soccer game watching loom.
I'm glad to hear about that because my son just started soccer.
Yes, this is important. This is important. Really important.
So how did your kids feel about you weaving on the sidelines?
You know, I don't know if I ever wound up doing it that much. The concept was great, but I took up knitting. I think I did more of that. And the reason was, when you whip out a loom, you get too much attention. And I didn't have the little mini Murex when my kids were still doing soccer. That would have been better because you can sort of hide it under your coat, you know. But I used to take it on the plane. When we first designed the loom, I took the 16-inch loom on a plane, and I put it on the tray. I don't think you could do that now. They'd probably take it away.
Why? It's not got sharp edges.
You could hit someone really hard with it. But no, you're right. Maybe you could. But I put it on the tray, and we took pictures for our original ads for Take Anywhere Loomer.
How long have you been in business?
Since 1996.
14 years. What's it taken to be successful and to continue doing the business all that time?
Working at it a lot and not being a state rep is going to really help. But it's just the perfect company. It's a niche market. Nobody in China has decided to copy me yet. Although I want to tell you a funny story about that. Mirex customers are very loyal, very loyal. And they can't stand it when they think someone's ripped off the Mirex loom. And someone contacted me and said, there's a loom that looks like the Mirex. It's on eBay. You got to do something about it. You have to do something about it, Claudia. I went on eBay and looked at this pitiful loom that really didn't look like a Mirex. I mean, I know what a Mirex looks like. And I could point out everything that was wrong with it. And they had about 6 of them that they were selling. Weird sizes, too. I don't remember if I contacted the person or not. I don't think I bothered. But then some of the customers who bought these looms contacted me and started complaining about these Mirex ripoffs. Like, wait, do you get it? You just bought a competitor's ripoff of my loom, and you're complaining to me. I can't do anything about it. So they didn't sell any more looms after those 6.
Now, I have seen what I'm assuming are Mirex looms on eBay.
Yes.
So you now do have an eBay presence?
Every once in a while, I'll sell a secondhand loom on eBay. Or there was a time when we were having a horrible time with our server, and our website was crashing all the time. So for a while there, I was selling a little bit on eBay.
Okay, good. I bought my Mirex loom off eBay, and I was like, oh gosh, I hope it's not a knockoff. No, but
you would know. You would know. I mean, really, you could tell from this picture. It's like, this is not a Murex loom. The interesting thing was the person must have thought, okay, I'll just go and get plumbing parts and this and that, and I'll whip one of these up. Well, they probably put more money into making that loom than what they sold it for, because they're economies of scale. And we buy thousands of pounds of aluminum and thousands of pounds of copper, and we have thousands of pieces made and manufactured for us, which you really can't reproduce in your garage.
Is it getting harder to produce the looms with the price of copper soaring?
Our manufacturing costs pretty much tripled over the last few years. That was hard. But I didn't want to raise the price of the loom, so we're just kind of dealing with it. And then we found a good deal on copper one day, so I bought thousands of pounds of it, so we'll have copper for a while.
I'm curious about the name Murex. Where did you get that?
I made it up. I looked up some Greek and Italian verbs for to wonder at, to mirror, and I can't remember what the original verb is, with mirari or something like that. And then I stuck, you know, the IX on the end, like Kleenex. Because I want people to say I'm weaving on my Murex, and they do. It's so cool. They don't say I'm weaving on my tapestry loom. They say I'm weaving on my Murex. So I made it up. It's to wonder at, to look at, to mirror.
Do you think most of your customers are beaders or tapestry weavers at this point?
Wow, that changes. That shifts. I think probably bead weavers, because there are so many more bead weavers than tapestry weavers. But I think the tapestry market is now growing again. There's so many shifts. The bead market just exploded. Every corner had to have a bead store. And now they're ramping down because there's just not that much business to go around. Plus, I think the internet makes it more difficult for bead stores to survive. But what was interesting about the bead market is it was hard to get into. The tapestry market was easy. Here's a tapestry loom. Weavers like looms. But there aren't a lot of people into bead weaving. But more importantly, the equipment for bead weaving was always kind of inexpensive and not so great. So when you presented the bead stores with a loom that was actually relatively expensive and very weaverly, you know, not what they were used to, they balked. So I call up a bead store and say, yeah, you have to sell this loom. It's really great. And they're, well, I'm not really into bead weaving and nobody's really into it. And then someone would come into the store and say, do you have a Murex loom? And then they'd call me up and say, okay, I want to sell your looms now. I'd be, okay. I'd sell them the minimum of two looms, and the customer would buy it. And sometimes a bead store owner would figure out how to use it and sell a lot of them. And then other times they'd just put it on the shelf, and it would just sort of sit there and look sad. And that would be the end of that outlet. We have some really great stores that sell the loom, and they do a really good job.
I remember eons ago, I was trying to learn bead weaving on one of those $6 little foam looms that had like no shedding device whatsoever. And it's entirely a different experience.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why nobody likes bead weaving, is because the equipment just wasn't that good.
I think that is very true. Bead weavers have a tendency to think the loom is expensive. The 16-inch loom is pretty much the most common size, and it costs $250. So if you're used to spending $6 on one of those little metal things, which don't really work, paying $250 seems like a lot. However, you can spend $250 in beads in about 5 minutes, you know, considering a tube goes for like $8.
Yeah, those Japanese delicacies are spendy.
So I'm like, okay, you really want your equipment to be great, and tapestry weavers understand that. Once you can convince them that if you have a great piece of equipment, those beads are going to weave themselves a lot better than if you have junky equipment. You know, once you get over that hurdle, you got them sold.
If somebody was interested in buying one, how do they go about doing that?
They can go to our website, murexlooms.com. There are stores throughout the country that sell them, weaving stores and bead stores, and stores in other countries. I've had stores in Australia, England, France, I believe, Germany, and I'm not sure if they still carry them. But we do a lot of sales outside this country from the website.
Aside from the looms, what other things do you sell?
We have stands that you can put all the size looms on, and we also have a treadle, an add-on treadle.
That raises the shed?
Yeah. That was something I wanted. I thought portable tapestry looms have to have the option of a treadle. You just absolutely had to have it. So we designed this treadle, which is connected by a cable, so the treadle can be anywhere on the floor. And you can use it either with both feet, going horizontally or vertically with one foot. It's fabulous. It raises and lowers the shed. It's just wonderful.
Do you have to like hold it the whole time that you have the shed?
No, it tends to stay in place. So if you take the treadle and the stand and the loom, you have a floor loom. But you can break it down and put it underneath the bed. I mean, one of the things I didn't like about tapestry looms is the big wooden ones take up an enormous amount of space. Our 38-inch loom, which can do a very wide piece, and the stand and the treadle, you have a floor loom that you don't have to look at all the time if you don't want to.
Now, I'm still trying to understand the treadle. So you push it and it stays down, and then you push it again to change the shut?
It's on a hinge, and it's two pieces of flat aluminum that are about 4 inches wide and about a foot long. So they're two pieces of aluminum, and there's a hinge in between them, so it rocks back and forth on the hinge. And there's a cable that goes up to the loom, and you take the handle, which goes into the shedding device, and you replace it with this other mechanism. And so when you push the treadle one way, it sends information to the cable to turn the shedding device. When you push it, it stays in place.
And then you rock it back the other way to change
so you can
the
do
other
it,
shed.
Like left and right foot on it, or just one foot on it.
Ah, very cool. Very innovative. So what else have you got?
We have kits. I always come up with little bead kits because they're so much fun. And we sell bead patterns. I like the designing part. There's a saying that if you love sailing, don't buy a sailboat company. I always thought that was bogus. I mean, if you love sailing, you should own a sailboat company, right? One of the wonderful things about Murex is I have to weave all the time. I have to come up with new ideas. I have to stay interested. So when I talk to my customers, I'm excited about it, as excited as they are. The other thing is when I talk to customers, I'm always learning new things that I incorporate. I recently taught a workshop. I'm teaching these two women, and I'm learning all these new things about my loom while I'm teaching and thinking, this is why I need to teach again. It's so much fun.
Have you ever incorporated any design changes based on customer feedback?
Yeah, I just did from that workshop, actually. A way of putting on heddles that would be a lot easier I got from that workshop. I was trying to come up with a new way, and we worked it out there. Yeah, constantly.
If you had to characterize what your guiding principles are for running Murex, what would that be?
This is going to sound so corny. Customer service. I deal with every customer. I love dealing with customers because people who buy looms are buying the ultimate toy. They're happy people. So dealing with them is just fun.
Unlike the people you have to deal with as a state representative?
Yeah, exactly. I have happy customers and sad constituents. I don't know. And also the whole manufacturing process for Murex is just wonderful. It's a very happy, pleasant environment. Nothing bad ever happens. The people who manage Murex are wonderful. I've been really blessed, really lucky with this whole process. I don't think it's like any other company in this world.
What are your plans for the future?
Recently, I decided that because I'm going to retire as a state rep, I'm going to retire from politics, I'm going to devote all my time to Murex. My daughter now works for me. She's my marketing director. So our plans are to double, triple, quadruple the size of Murex in the future. I do want to grow it. It's kind of time.
The next clip is an outtake from the interview. I didn't include it in the interview because it didn't quite fit into that segment of the show, but it was just too seasonal not to include. And one of the interesting things about this interview was that for the very first time, the interviewee's whole family stayed and watched the interview. Claudia Chase's brother and her daughter, Lena, were there, and some other relatives who I'm not exactly sure, but there was a crowd. And I don't know about Claudia, but it made me a little nervous at first. I had to kind of get used to it. So in this outtake, you could actually hear her family laughing and interacting, and her brother is the comedian of this bit.
Yeah, I was on TV once, and it was the weirdest thing ever. I was on as a state rep with two other state reps, and it turned out what they wound up asking us about. It was nothing to do with politics. They asked us about how we prepare our turkey, and I'm like, I've never cooked a turkey in my life. And then my husband calls up, and he's like, I'm the one who cooks the turkeys in the household. It was hilarious. It was one of the stupidest things I've ever done in my life.
They didn't tell you ahead of time?
No, and they had... Yeah, and the three of us who were on were like very geeky politicians, and none of us were really into the cooking turkey thing. So we were pretty amazed.
Well, you think that would be like relevant information. You know, like, oh, by the way, we're going to be talking to you about turkeys.
Yeah. Well, they said we're going to talk turkey, but she thought...
Yeah, politics. So it was not. And the person who was doing it is a very political person, very liberal, weird. You know, I love her. And it was about.
I hear a phone off the hook.
Yeah, there's a phone off the hook, guys. I'm probably going to start soon. So save all yelling for afterwards.
Coming up is a song about Thanksgiving. I couldn't decide whether to go with the sentimental, sweet song or the somewhat crude and funny one, so I'm going to play both. This first song is Thanksgiving by Steve Stellavato, and it is the sweet one.
Mother's voice is gravelly from smoking too many cigarettes and breathing in that stale air. She said, I just heard someone pull up in the driveway. Tell your sister to come downstairs. He walks through that door, lay his coat on the bed. This is still his house. Remember how we said, today's a good day for forgiving. And there's cranberry sauce from scratch, and the good dishes have cracks. But we'll sit around the table holding hands for grace, and we will not leave our place till the last cup of coffee is gone. Are often called to do the great things, and a tiny seed becomes that tall tree. So kids, don't you judge someone, 'cause probably you don't see the great thing inside that they could be. So when he walks through that door, don't turn away. I know you've been wronged, but he's been disgraced. Today's a good day for forgiving. And there's cranberry sauce from scratch, and the good dishes have cracks. But we'll sit around the table holding hands for grace, and we will not leave our place till the last cup of coffee is gone. Cranberry sauce from scratch, and the good dishes have cracks. But we'll sit around the table holding hands for grace, and we will not leave our place till the last cup of coffee is gone.
Our next song is I Heart Thanksgiving by Robert Lund. This is the funny song. Now, if you're easily offended, well, best just turn off the show now. On the other hand, if you are a fan of Weird Al Yankovic, you are in for a treat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried to make it Monday, but the hailstorm closed O'Hare. So I carjacked me a Hyundai, 19 hours and I'll be there. I've got no more paid vacation, and your family's always rude. But I'll bust my butt to get there for the food. Well, I keep on thinking about your sister's boys and berry pies, and the sweet potato casserole brings teardrops to my eyes. Though there's loads of carbohydrates and the fat gram counts I've seen, it's my first excuse to gorge since Halloween. Will you feed me rolls and drumsticks? Will you heap beans on my plate? Will you stuff me till my bum sticks out where your chair can't bear my weight? Though my seams are ripping, I don't mind saying I heart Thanksgiving. Pilgrims 1620 feast. It's their fault that my blood pressure and cholesterol increased. If you want help washing dishes, I've devised a brilliant plan. I'll just fall asleep and blame the tryptophan. Will you feed me till there's nothing? Will you feed me broiler loads? Will you stuff me full of stuffing until my gastric tract explodes? And if I'm still living, I'll keep on saying I heart Thanksgiving. Cranberries, old lady. I haven't had thirds yet.
That's all for this episode. And now it's time to get warped, because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave. Our musical guests this episode were Steve Stellavato with Thanksgiving and Robert Lund with his musical parody, I Heart Thanksgiving. Our sponsors this episode are the talented ladies at Just Our Yarn, independent artisans creating hand-dyed luxury yarns and kits for weavers and knitters. Their colors are simply luminous. You can find out more information about their yarns and their upcoming show schedule on their website, justouryarn.com.